everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We are glad you are with us tonight, and as we're wrapping up this month-long section of, we're talking about community, and how do we find community as homeschoolers, especially when we have children that maybe don't fit in the box of typical, well, definitely public school communities, but also maybe even homeschool communities, and how do we make that work for our families? And tonight, my very special guest is Sherry Payne. Welcome, Sherry, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me, Peggy. I'm so glad to be here. I love helping people start groups, find groups, and, you know, in the homeschool community. You know, it's so great when you find that little tribe of homeschoolers that you just fit in with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And as we've talked in the last couple of weeks, you know, it doesn't happen overnight, and sometimes it's for a season. And so we're going to dive in a little bit more to, you know, customizing it, making this unique community. And so tonight we're talking about crafting your own unique homeschooling community, and so Sherry's got lots of great ideas. She is she helps leaders to create groups, and she helps them through their issues and the ups and downs of running groups and all of that. And so she's got a lot of insight to share with us tonight. So I'm really excited about that. I also want to thank Right Start Math for sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more from them about halfway through the broadcast. But thank you, Right Start, for being a partner with SPED Homeschool and your sponsorship. And so Sherry, to just cut us off, can you tell us a little bit about your family and your background of homeschooling, and kind of then how did that lead into groups, and what did that look like for your family?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was in a very unique position. My husband and I decided to homeschool before we even had kids.
Wow.
We ended up in a church plant, and we didn't really know the people all that well. And then we found out that they all homeschooled, and we thought, are we joining a cult? we really didn't know anything about homeschooling. And you know, spending a few years there with this group of people, we thought, that's what we want our kids to be like. These kids are amazing. And that just convinced us on homeschooling. And we started off there, and we never looked back.
Wow.
And my three kids are now all grown. And moved on. My oldest, Katie, is a police officer and a college graduate. And my son is a welder. And he also works as a long-term missionary in Mexico and speaks Spanish very fluently. He's amazing. And my youngest is currently in college. She's at community college and will be transferring next fall to Virginia Commonwealth University. She's studying I'm not sure exactly what it's called, but the background stuff for movies and television is what she's into, and she enjoys so much. So, and love them. And so my husband and I are pretty much empty nesters. The kids are still kind of in and out a little bit, but and then I started working after my kids graduated. I started working for Home Educators Association of Virginia. And having led different kinds of homeschool groups during my time as a homeschooler myself, I just kind of fell into this role of helping people who lead groups or who want to lead groups.
That's
so
awesome.
It's kind of my passion.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. You know, we talk to so many homeschool moms that they're like, well, before I homeschooled, this is not what my passion was, but I realized as I started homeschooling that I had a new passion, and they continue to, and well, that's kind of my story too, is why SPED Homeschool came about. But yeah, we have a heart, and it just expands beyond our family. So that's exciting that, that you can help families with that and groups that are helping homeschoolers all across the state. And HEAV is, stands for what?
Home Educators Association of Virginia.
Yeah.
So it's the state nonprofit organization that helps homeschooling in Virginia.
Great. Thanks for filling that in. Mm-hmm. So if you are watching, we have lots of viewers, I see. If you're watching, we're live on YouTube, on Facebook, as well as on Periscope right now. We'd love for you to be part of our conversation. So definitely put your comments, your questions in the feed. Tonight we're talking about crafting your own unique homeschooling community. So if you have questions about how do we make that work? What does that look like? Or how do I, you know, find that best fit for my family? That's kind of what we're talking about tonight. Mm-hmm. And just as a parent, what you can do to customize that. So so Sherry, as we get started in just that conversation, what types of groups are there that the families can even look at? And I don't know, you just can elaborate, you can do mm-hmm. a list, or however you'd like to present that.
Well, you know, everybody has a different way of like classifying them. For me, I like to classify them into some different terminology that I like to use, what we call support groups. I feel like support groups are the kinds of groups that exist really to help the parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That their job is things like homeschool 101, answer people's questions about how do I homeschool math? How do I handle my child who has a problem? They do things like mom's night out. They will also do things like field trips, arrange field mm-hmm. trips for your family. But it's like their main purpose, I feel like, is to help the parent, not necessarily the student. I mean, they do things that benefit a student, but right. their main purpose is to help the parents. Mm-hmm. And I feel that those are what we would call support groups.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Then there's the whole gamut of support groups. There are support groups who basically are just Facebook groups where you could just ask mm-hmm. a question,
right.
all the way
yep.
to groups mm-hmm. that have something every week. You know, that
right.
they have a lot going on.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so that mm-hmm. there's a whole gamut there. And then there are what I call academic. So a lot of people like to call them co-ops.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think co-op actually more means where parents are cooperatively working together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one type of academic program, but then there are other types of academic programs where people drop off their children, almost
right.
like a school.
Uh-huh.
And leave, and professionals work with your children
hmm.
while you're there. They're all, I call all of those under the spectrum of academic programs. And
yeah.
again, it's
but
all
it's
the
nice,
whole spectrum.
It's nice you point out, though, that there is a spectrum of them. Because I think people just have this general mm-hmm. idea of, well, this is what, you know, a co-op or, you know, a drop-off program is to look like. And that's not true.
No. And some are a little bit of both. There are mm-hmm. ones that actually, you know, it's funny how you can have ones where some parents stay, some parents go, some parents teach, some parents drop off.
Right.
You know, there really is a whole gamut mm-hmm. of things that you can have. And it can range just be something as simple as two families who meet in one of their homes or trade off homes
mm-hmm.
and you teach art and I'll teach math.
Right.
That's an academic co-op. That's a cooperative. We're working cooperatively together all the way to these kinds of programs that some of them are even called hybrid schools, where they're
right.
not technically classified a private school. But if you looked at it, you would think that's a private school. That's
mm-hmm.
not a homeschool cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's like the whole range there.
Wow.
But I call them all academic programs. I like to use that name. And here's the difference between a support group is an academic program focuses on the student.
Okay. Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
so the whole purpose of it is to help the student, to provide courses and materials and program and information for
mm-hmm.
the student. I mean, it helps the parent because the parent
well, right.
wants
yeah.
help in that particular area, but their focus mm-hmm. is on the student.
Yes.
And then there's another type of group, and I like to classify these under clubs. These are groups that are arranged around a specific, very narrow purpose, like a sports program. A lot of
yes.
states have homeschool sports programs.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do things like chess club,
right.
mm-hmm. speech and debate clubs for homeschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness, robotic leagues. A lot of homeschoolers
uh-huh.
do robotic leagues.
Mm-hmm.
There are Boy Scout programs that are specifically only homeschool students. So that would fall under that category because it's designed specifically for homeschoolers. And I like to classify those under what I would call clubs.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But again, you know, that's the other thing that's really interesting about the homeschool community is a lot of groups are actually a little bit of all these things. Mm-hmm. They can be a support group mm-hmm. and an academic, or they can be partly a support group and a club, or they're a club mm-hmm. and an academic program. There's really no boundaries here because these are all independently run programs that homeschoolers themselves start for their own purposes. They could be anything.
Right. That's a very good point. And I think that's good to point out, especially if for a parent who's gone to maybe visit one group and saying, oh, this is not for us, that there are other groups that do exist. And it's finding that right fit for your family. And so I think there's very few groups that even look or feel the same as each other, because they become like an extension of the families that participate in them, of course. And so that makes a huge difference. So I love that. I've never heard it classified that way. I think it's very helpful though. And also that there's a spectrum within each one of those categories that families should be aware of. So that's great information. How do we find groups that provide services? Since we focus, mostly on parents who have children with special educational needs, there may be some groups that, like some of the drop-off programs might not be the best, or if they are, they're going to need a lot of tweaking and changing. So how does a parent navigate that, first finding what's going to work, mm-hmm. and then also working with that group on a consistent basis to make it continually work?
Yeah. It's funny because you would think the homeschool community is pretty tight-knit and it'd be easy, but not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is all of these are basically private organizations that are started by homeschool parents who just say, hey, friend of mine, let's go, and you teach this and I'll teach that. And then it gets bigger and they start renting out space and they do more, but it's all independently run. There's no organization. There's no real law. Well, every state's different, but most states don't really have any laws that would cover how these things are organized or run or looked at, except in relation to taxes and things like that. But in general, there really is no comprehensive way of finding them. You really just have to know where to look. And most of the state homeschool organizations keep lists of the groups that they know of. Here's the thing. I'm the one who runs the list for Virginia. Mm-hmm. And we have over 300 groups on our list. We're a big state.
That's awesome.
But I have been trying to track. I want to be a comprehensive list. I want our list to be comprehensive. I currently have a list of 198 groups that I know exist, but I can't connect with them and get their information, but I've heard about them.
Uh-huh.
And how many more are out there that I have never even heard of?
Right. Because they're starting like every other day now.
Exactly. Because people are starting them all the time and for different reasons, different purposes. And they don't know a lot of them, to where they can put this list or where they can submit this information. So for those of you who are starting groups, look to your state organization. And then those of you who are looking for groups, that's a good place to start.
Right.
Most of the state organizations do maintain a list, a lot of them on their website of groups and their organization. Our website in Virginia, hgav.org, we have a very comprehensive list divided by region in our state to make it easier, because it's such a huge state, to make it easier to find one near you. And many other states do have that. If you don't know your state organization, I'd like to share with you a website.
Yes, please do.
And let me see if I can find it.
I've got it already on here. So it's homeschoolfreedom.com.
Homeschoolfreedom.com. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. I've got it up on the page. So if you're listening on the podcast, it's just homeschoolfreedom.com.
All
three words together.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of resources so that will lead them to all their state organizations.
There's a list on one of the tabs of that website that lists all the state organizations. Not every state has one, but most states do.
Right.
And that would be your best resource for being able to connect with groups in your area. And then I would also highly recommend looking for Facebook groups in your area.
Yeah.
I know Facebook is just one platform where people have, but it is probably the best and most comprehensive mm-hmm. area where homeschoolers gather.
So
I would highly recommend looking for, search homeschool in the name of your city or your area or your state and see if you can find something specific to you in your area that you can connect with. And a lot of times, once you've connected with a group like that, people in that group will know things and you can have questions
there. Networking, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. They will know and they will connect you with who you are looking for, mm-hmm. for sure.
I know just our local group here and, you know, our little city, you know, you can go in and say, where can I find a tutor? Where can I, you know, do this? Who's going on a field trip? Where, you know, you just have to ask the questions and people will just start throwing things at you. And but there are a lot of resources, but like you said, that they're not, I mean, they're not like publicized and people don't get ads because they're so tiny of a group, but there are things going on all the time.
Yeah. And sometimes it may take a while mm-hmm. to find the right connection and finally get them, but keep looking because they exist out there. It's just not that easy to find, but they do exist.
Yeah. I know even our state organization here in Texas, you can put in your zip code and it like populates on a map all the groups that are around you. So it's quite fascinating how we can get connected with homeschoolers, and it does. It has a list of the clubs and the academics and the support. So, that's great.
Yeah.
So those state organizations are awesome. And like I talked with Allison a couple weeks ago, just want to plug this again, that your state homeschool organization, you definitely want to be plugged into them. You want to become a member. You want to know what's going on in your state and support them because they are on the front line to make sure that homeschool freedom stays in your state. And so definitely check out that homeschoolfreedom.com and get connected with that organization. So we want to make sure that they get plugged in with you as you with them. So
absolutely.
Just love what you do. So. So how do we go about starting our own group? And just like maybe some general overview of why would I want to start a group? And or maybe I just feel like there's nothing that's a good fit, but maybe I just want to start a group. You know, how do we even start like processing that and going through that to make it into something beyond an idea.
Yeah. I know. Well, it's intimidating when you're thinking about starting a group. And if you have in mind and vision some of these groups that exist that are huge mm-hmm. and have like 3 or 4 days worth of many classes and teachers and all of that. The thing is all of those groups started small.
That's a very
good
point.
So don't forget that you're not expected to come up with some huge program. For me, I think the best concept of starting your own program or support group or club is just find one other homeschooling family who kind of is like-minded with you and that's your co-op. There you go. You've started a co-op, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if there's specific things that you need when you're talking about special education, particularly.
Yeah.
Oh, even in places that have a lot of resources and a lot of groups and activities available for homeschool may not necessarily have things that are friendly for particular issues that we have with our children or who don't really know how to handle our children. And there are ones that exist that do, and they're great. But if they don't exist or they're full or they're not quite exactly what you needed or wanted for yourself, you know, you just need to find that one other family who has that same need, that same desire, and you've got your co-op. There you go.
Because there's other people probably out there thinking about it, but they just maybe say, well, you know, if I had somebody else and maybe they aren't as, you know, willing to take the dive as you might be, you know, and just to have that other support. I remember when we moved to a new city and the MOPS group was full there and I had preschoolers and I'm like, what do I do without a MOPS group? And I talked to a couple of ladies and they're like, let's start our own, you know, and you, just that community, that support, you know, and just launching. And like you said, it grew. We had one group, then it grew to two groups, and it grew to three groups, and it just expanded. I don't even know how many are going on in that city anymore. Just from just a small, let's try this, let's do this, and because it's what we need. And so I love that yes, yeah. It just has to start somewhere. Somebody has to take the initiating step.
Right.
To say, let's make this happen, and it can just be what you need. And I love that too, what you said about, you know, just, you know, pulling in a specialist or a teacher, that somebody that meets the specific needs of your child, and not just thinking, oh, I've got to meet the needs of the masses. You know, that was what I got from what you said, is no, I just need to meet our own needs and let's figure out how to do that. So that's awesome.
I promise you, that is how every co-op support group out there started, was a mom going, this is what I need.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it started. That's where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because the whole purpose of a group is to enhance or help your homeschooling.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, when you're looking, not just when you're starting a group, when you're looking for a group as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not every group that already exists is going to be 100% fit for you.
Right.
But the way that you look at it is, you have to think, is it going to be a benefit to me, enough of a benefit for me to put in the effort and the time that it takes to be a part of this group?
Right.
Yes. Right. And if it isn't, mm-hmm. then that is not the group for you. You know, that's why, again, you want to look at more than one group. You want to keep looking around. There may be a lot of groups in your area. But again, if none of those groups meet those parameters where it's you're going to get a more benefit from it than the effort that it takes to be a part of it, then that's when it's time to start thinking about starting your own group.
Yeah. Well, you know, the way you say that, it's like it's an investment.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, it's an investment either way.
Yeah, being a part of a group is absolutely an investment.
Hmm.
You know, here's one thing I like to tell people who join my groups when I led them, is when you're educating your children, you're responsible for your own children. When you are part of a cooperative where you're going to be partially teaching or assisting or doing something,
mm-hmm.
you're taking on responsibility for other people's children, and you have to take that responsibility seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So, it has to be worth the effort for you. You have to be getting enough back from mm-hmm. what your children are getting from that group to be worth the effort that you're putting into it. If it's not,
yeah.
then you're just spinning mm-hmm. your wheels. It's not doing anything for you. So they have to think the same mm-hmm. thing when you're starting your own group as well.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you're going to be the one organizing it and starting it and planning it out.
Right.
It has to be worth
mm-hmm.
the time. But the nice thing about starting your own group is, of course, that's going to be much closer to what you exactly need for your children.
Right, exactly. It's much more customized than, you just like you said, you know, earlier, is it the fit enough to make the investment worth it? But
yeah.
here, you know, yes, so this fit is customized. It's gonna fit, but again, it's
right.
the give and take of how much time, you know, finances, what, you know, all those different things that are involved in getting a group up and going to, or joining a group, because it costs usually a lot of those things as well. But
and money.
Yes. But the payoff is, you know, like you said, it's worth it. If it's one of those groups that definitely meets the needs that you can't fill without a group.
So, yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Sherry just about the specifics of what logistics do you need to think through in, you know, maybe I want to start a group, or maybe we've started a group and there's some things we need to rethink or maybe backtrack on, and that we should have done the right way, or these are the problems we're experiencing. And so we definitely want you to bring your comments and your questions. We have a viewer on our YouTube channel that said hello. So, but definitely let us know what you want to bring to our conversation as far as questions and comments about groups, and that Sherry can field, as well as just more information that she's going to share about just from her experience in working with groups and how to set it up the right way so that it is one of those mutually beneficial arrangements that's good for your family and those that you bring along on that journey with you. So, all right, well, I'll let you take a break, Sherry, and we're going to hear from Right Start Math. And I just want to thank Right Start for, again, sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. If you don't know much about Right Start, I want to tell you about them. Right Start Math will help your child understand, apply, and enjoy mathematics using games to learn concepts, strategies, and to practice math facts. This unique program uses visualization of quantities, de-emphasizes counting, and provides strategies, which are visual pictures, for learning the facts. Place value is introduced early to solidify the child's understanding. And the primary tool is an AL abacus, a specifically designed two-sided abacus that's kinesthetic and visual. So, you know, if you have a child that definitely learns that way, and math is a struggle, this might be something to look at. Do your children like to play games? Well, they have those too. They have over 300 card games that kids will love. They just want to help your child achieve success by getting rid of the frustration and the tears while having fun doing math. So definitely check out Right Start Math. And if you are watching, you'll see it's rightstartmath.com. And if you're listening on our podcast, then just look up that website. So thank you, Right Start Math, and I'm going to bring Sherry back, and we're going to continue our conversation in talking about just customizing and crafting your own unique homeschooling community. And we had such a good amount of information in the first half an hour just about different categories of groups, and I love that word, you know, we use it with autism, but the spectrum within the categories, yeah. And often we don't talk about that within a community, and just how to find that good fit for your family is not always it's the first group you visit, and so definitely, yeah. As we're talking about, you know, starting your own homeschool group, I love what you said in the first half an hour about starting small and not thinking too big for people like me who tend to think big picture, you know, yeah. This is what it'll be in 20 years. It's not probably the best place to go. Let's just get our needs met first. And so how do you even begin that? What are the resources that people need to have? And I'm just going to kind of let you steer this, because absolutely. I'm sure there's a lot of things that you have to share and I don't even know what they are.
No worries. You know, I always think the very first thing, well, once you decide you're going to start a group, you just really need that one other family. You can have more, but you really only need to have one other family to really get this going. But the first thing you got to do, I mean, everyone wants to dive into, they want to see the end product. Right away, right? We want to start thinking about the end product, but there really is a process to this. And I really feel like the most important thing to do first is to define your group. What is why does your group exist? What is the purpose of it? That's called your mission. And a mission is so incredibly important. If you've never really heard it before, I highly recommend reading Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's a really short book. Even better would be his very famous viral YouTube video TED Talk on leadership, on why, crafting a why for your organization. It's a great introduction to his purposes and the whole understanding. And he has some great examples in there. And I love that. And I really think that will get you really starting thinking on the right path about understanding mission and why mission is important, so that you can craft a mission so you start right. Okay. Because then once you have your mission, you can go to the how and the what, right? what exactly you're going to do and then how you're going to do it, you have to have that why first.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. When you go, we tend, I don't know about you, I'm one of those type of people that when you get to the what, I start thinking about, oh, you know, we could do this, but then we can also do this.
And then exactly, the ideas are too.
You know, and it's like, well, we can only do so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a mission, you can go, well, that does not fit with our mission. That's right. Completely outside the scope of why we even exist. Mm-hmm. And that makes it easier for you to say no, to narrow down the focus of mm-hmm. what you're doing so that it's manageable. Because
as you're bringing new people in, mm-hmm. that makes it even more difficult. You're not just arguing with yourself, you're arguing with them and trying to keep on track with that.
And that also helps you with who you bring in, right? Because the people that you bring in have to buy into your mission. If they don't buy into your mission, they're going to be working against you instead of with you. Well, you want to bring in people who mm-hmm. see that mission and get inspired by it and excited by it and want to be a part of it.
Right. Yeah.
So another,
like, create a sign and, or, you know, some way to keep transmitting that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's in his book talks about how to write a really succinct mission statement that completely will totally inspire people. And get them excited, because that's what you need, are excited people. Because mm-hmm. those are the people who are going to step into it, buy into it,
right.
and then help you create this vision.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other thing about homeschool organizations that are popping. Don't forget that we are also all parents who also homeschool, and a lot of us also work.
Yeah.
You have to keep it manageable. Mm-hmm. And the mm-hmm. more people you can inspire with the vision, the more you can share the work. Because the more you try and do it alone, the more you try and put the burden on one or two people,
mm-hmm.
The less successful you're going to be, the more burnout you're going to have with people. The more you can get people to buy into that vision, the more the work is going to spread out among other mm-hmm. people, and it's not going to be as much of a burden on you when you start your group.
That's a very good point. Yeah, you see so many groups, and I think it happened even with COVID, is that with the such large influx, and all of these groups just felt overburdened, and they weren't set up properly to and they didn't know their why, and so they started to, you know, add these extra things that these new homeschoolers needed, and it made it very unmanageable, and you could tell which groups were set up well and which ones weren't very quickly because of that influx. Mm-hmm. So great advice. Love that.
Yeah. And the nice thing with the really well-crafted mission is when things happen like that and people start coming to you asking you to provide this kind of service or that kind of service,
mm-hmm.
you can more easily say no to things that don't fit with your mission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Don't change your mission for other people. That's one of my biggest sayings. I really feel very strongly about that. You have a mission for a reason. You crafted that mission for a specific purpose. Unless that purpose changes, change your mission first and then, you know, move along with that. But don't compromise your mission to satisfy people so that you can say yes to them.
Mm-hmm.
Your organization exists for a purpose. If somebody wants something that's outside of that purpose, that is your excuse for saying no.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not who we are. That's not why we exist. And I always like to say, bless you. We love you. Let me help you find another organization that can help you,
mm-hmm.
that can better fit your needs. But it's not going to be us.
Yeah, I think it's good to flip this too. For parents who have children with special needs who are going to groups and asking, can you change this for my child? And how much tweaking and changing fits within their mission? Can you get their mission statement while you're looking at the group? And are you asking them to go beyond who they say they are by what you're asking?
Yes.
So that's powerful.
Yes.
That just to understand that we all can't accommodate everybody. Homeschool groups are not like public schools where they're mandated by the state to, you know, to give free and appropriate education to everyone. Like Sherry had said earlier, you know, these groups are private and they have specific purposes. And if your specific purpose is to meet the special needs of your child, guess what? You don't need to make it accessible to all other children either.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. So yeah. I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is so important. And it yeah, is. Can get a really reduce a lot of burnout. And like you say, it shares your passion too, that fuel that, mm-hmm. you know, to bring other people on and to have them really come alongside you and say, yes, this is what I want to, and find that commonality. So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because they're going to be your champions and they're going to be your fellow workers. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that buy into your vision are going to be willing to do so much for you.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And they'll make your load so much lighter. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that you start first with that. If you already exist as a homeschool organization, though, and you have never done this, it is never too late to stop right now, have a yeah. board meeting, mm-hmm. sit down and figure out, what is our mission? Why do we exist? Mm-hmm. You know, and stop and define it. And then
yeah.
redo all your other materials, your policies and procedures and everything else, and make sure that it all fits with your mission. If it doesn't fit with your mission, what are we going to do? We're going to change it. We're going to drop it. How are we going to work this? But I really promise you that will help so much in really streamlining your organization, why they exist and who, what they're doing and who they're doing it for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. So after you get your why and then your how and your what, I don't know, we talked maybe a little bit about that. Is there any more of that mm-hmm. that you have to talk about?
Yeah. So your what is like, why, you know, based on your mission then, you know, and you don't want your mission to be too narrow because you want to be able to adapt to what's going on in the world.
That's a good point.
Yes. So, mm-hmm. but you don't want it to also be too broad where anything could possibly fit under your mission, right?
Right, exactly.
So then with that mission, what is it that your organization specifically is going to do? Mm-hmm. And then how are you going to do it?
Right.
So let's say we're going to, our mission is to, it has to do with, let's say homeschooling with special needs. Mm-hmm. So say you craft a mission that has that as its focus, right? Mm-hmm. So then you have to think about the what. Are you going to provide resources, mm-hmm. academic classes, support for parents, right? So you have to figure out your what that still fits very closely with your why. And then once you have that figured out, then you figure out your how. How is it going to happen?
Right.
You know, yeah. like where and when and how often and how much mm-hmm. is it going to cost and, mm-hmm. you know, the mm-hmm. details, right? But it always starts, and if you look at that Simon Sinek video that I showed you, you'll see he has these concentric circles where why is at the middle, mm-hmm. and then the what is outside, and then the how is at the end. Okay. And the fortunate thing is, like, most people think of the how first, and yes. then they kind of work their way in. Uh-huh. It should be the other way around. You start with the middle, the why, and work your way out from there.
Right, because there's different things that can grow out of that as yes. needs provide. And, you know, just as you morph through your homeschooling, you know, years, your kids' needs change. And guess what?
Yes.
Does that why still accommodate us, or are we going to start a new group and leave that yes. group to the last people? I mean, so those yes. are some things to think about too. Mm-hmm. I never even thought about that till you started, you know, talking about that. But
that's and if you cool. always have that why in mind mm-hmm. as you're doing everything else, it helps. It helps you understand exactly how to fit everything else. Like when you're writing policies right. and procedures and, mm-hmm. you know, all those kinds of things for your organization, it's really much, so much easier when you understand what your why is.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it so much easier to write all the details out and to figure out exactly how this is going to work in what mm-hmm. direction you're going to go. It really does help so much.
I can see that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in just running a nonprofit, it's the same way. It's just larger mm-hmm. scale. But
yes.
But yeah. And, you know, just saying this is why we're doing what we're doing. That's great. So mm-hmm. so yeah. So let's get into some details. I know you had some resources to share and things mm-hmm. like that. Or yeah. you know, what are some other things that we need to think of that, you know, you've been talking about policies and procedures, and I'm sure there's finances and, you know, all these other things that are behind the scenes that we think about, all the things that, you know, the ministry or the outreach or the classes and the support, and that's all right. great, but there's a framework underneath that.
Yeah. And you know, I think one of the things you have to consider, always start small, right? Mm-hmm. And the smaller you are and the less formal you can be, but there's a point where more formality has to come in. And I think the main point is whenever money starts getting involved, that's when you have to start really thinking seriously. There's ways to avoid money changing hands. Let me point out first why it's an issue.
Okay.
Say you're just we're just an informal group and we're going to have field trips and Sally's going to collect all the money for the field trips to pay the thing. Well, here's the thing that I don't think a lot of people realize. Even if she's just taking that money into her checking account and then paying right out to the zoo or whatever that they're going to, the IRS considers that to be personal income.
Oh, wow.
So you may not want to get tangled up in that kind of a mess. Mm-hmm. Also, if somebody has an grievance against you that relates to money in any way, you want protection from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not coming against you personally. So whenever money starts changing hands, you become an issue. Now you can avoid that. There are ways you can avoid that. Some things we've done is have people pay for a field trip directly to the facility. If you can arrange that with the facility to make that happen, you're just providing the information. The families themselves are paying directly to the facility for the organization for that. Or say you're doing classes with paid teachers. I know of a lot of homeschool organizations where the parents actually pay the teachers directly. I did that for a co-op with my kids when they were older, and it's like 10 checks every month. But the thing is then the organization doesn't have to worry about that money and the financial issues of that money. Each teacher is an independent contractor who's running their own business, and each parent is specifically paying them, and the organization is not involved except we're providing the space for this to happen.
Got it.
Once any kind of money does change hands, because part of the problem with that is you're meeting in a facility, you have rent, you need to provide insurance, all those kinds of things. Oh, now money does have to pass through the hands of my organization. Now I have to become more formal. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the thing though. The IRS allows for informal small organizations who make less than $6,000 or $6,000 of money passing through their account every year. You can get an EIN number through the IRS without having to become an official organization. You will have to file a certain form to the IRS every year. And you can use that EIN number to get a organization checking account and use that to pass all the money through. And then it doesn't become an issue with people in personal finances anymore. There's information about all of this very specifically, and I highly recommend that everybody do a lot of research into this. Carol Topp is homeschool CPA.com is her website. I also highly recommend her book. This is called Homeschool Co-ops, How to Start Them, Run Them, and Not Burn Out. This is basically the Bible for anyone who wants to start a co-op. Highly recommend it. She also has a lot of other books about the IRS in your homeschool organization, how to pay workers in a homeschool organization, which are more for bigger organizations, but this is the one to start off with. And she explains a lot of the stuff about the financial issues in this book as well. And she has a specific page on her website about that whole thing with having a more informal, unincorporated, unofficial nonprofit organization and getting an EIN number. I highly recommend you go through her website and read through that information on how exactly to do that. But once you pass that threshold of having a certain amount of money come through, you would have to become either, it depends on your state to a certain extent, your state laws and then the federal laws, but she has this all listed in all of her resources on the website. As far as becoming a 501c3 nonprofit organization, or if you want to become a business or a social organization, a 501c7, She has all that information on there. I know that sounds all daunting. It's not a lot of strange terms and things. Uh-huh. It's actually really not that difficult.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting, though, that, you know, to make the distinction that you can have a nonprofit without it being a 501c3.
Yes.
And it's very simple to have that, you know, just with the EIN number. And the reporting to the IRS is a postcard that you fill out online. I mean, it's so very simple. So don't let that deter you from what you feel like. I really need to start my own group. That's just a very small part of it. And
And it protects you
too. Yeah,
it's really worth the work into finding out how to do this exactly and the details of how to do this, because this is all your protection for you as the leaders of the organization, the people that are running the organization. This is all for your own protection. And again, it's not that difficult to do. So I
know in Texas, our state organization offers help for support groups and co-ops and all that to get insurance through. Yes. Does HEAV do the same thing then? Do you have like somebody that you send people to, or you have a discounted insurance?
No, we don't, but we know who I'm actually the director of leadership support. So I would be the one that people would be talking to if you're interested in starting a group in Virginia. And I have information on all the different organizations that do provide insurance, and I'd be happy to give that to you. But we don't have any kind of discount. But if you are a member of HSLDA, they do have discounts for groups on NCG insurance, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I highly recommend becoming a member of them as your group is getting started, because they also provide a lot of great services, including legal support, because you're getting into some legal issues here when you're starting a group as well. And they are a great help for that. So it's within your best interest to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's not expensive at all. So it's very worth it. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I highly recommend that. But we at HEAV in Virginia, we have a Facebook group for all of our leaders that you can come and talk to other leaders who have been doing this for many years. Mm-hmm. We have a 2-day leadership conference every year, and we bring in a lot of top experts who will answer a lot of your questions and give you training on leadership and leadership principles. Mm-hmm. We have regional meetings. We're actually right in the process of our regional meetings right now every fall. Mm-hmm. And I'm always here. If anybody wants to get in contact with me, it's leadersupport@heav.org. And I'm happy to help you with anything specific to Virginia. And again, if you go to that Homeschool Freedom website and find your state organization, they also have the same resources for your state. And they can provide you with the same things specific to your state as well.
Right. Yeah. That's good information to know. And, you know, mm-hmm. just to know there are other people out there. You're not the first. You're not, creating your own wheel. You're just, you know, you can borrow, and people are so happy to share resources that they have. And, you know, here's our code of conduct, or, you know, and
yes, that. Mm-hmm. They'll share with you all kinds of great things. I mean, and we always say this here at HEAV, it's like, don't reinvent the wheel.
Yes.
Leadership principles are leadership principles.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You do not have to create and learn and create all these resources on your own. They already exist out there. Mm-hmm. You just need to find them. There's also a national Facebook group that I highly recommend. It's called I Am a Homeschool Group Leader. Yes, that is an excellent group for networking with leaders all over the United States who can give you information and help you, provide you with resources. You can ask questions. It's a very great resource. I really appreciate them, and they are excellent at really helping out. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're definitely not alone if you're Mm-mm. feeling led to start a group. And so, what else do you have to share with our families?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. You know, one of the nice things about starting groups is they can be very specific to what your needs are. I'm thinking of a great model we have here in Virginia, a homeschool group called Homeschool Plus, and My kids went there. They don't have, well, my one daughter has ADHD, but they also provide a program called Brain Bridges specifically for students with special needs. And they have, they saw a need in their community and it really fits within their mission. They started a whole kind of subsection of their regular co-op, you know, which provides regular classes, but they have this whole section of, they have ABA therapists who work with your children. And this was all started by a homeschool mom. And she saw the need in her community. She felt that really fit with the mission of their organization. And they started this whole separate subset of their co-op, which provides all these resources. And these things exist. And the really nice thing I think about having a group setting is you, while you maybe can't afford a lot of certain kinds of therapies on your own, if you can get a group together, you can afford so much more. There's so much out there and available. And a lot of these people who are doing this already, and I know our friends at Homeschool Plus, the director of Homeschool Plus is Margaret McLuhan. I know they would be very happy to share with you what they do and how they do it and how you can do something similar in your own community and provide those resources that are really needed by our children who have some really profound special needs that maybe cannot be helped in a traditional co-op setting, that they just don't really have the resources or the knowledge to help. There are ways to provide those things in a co-op setting with just some homeschool moms getting together and brainstorming and figuring out how to make this happen.
That's a great point, is that it can just be special needs oriented and for therapy, and when you share the cost, it becomes much more realistic. I know we have so many parents that say, oh, I just can't do it. I know when my kids were younger, we wanted them to do gym, but you know, it was really hard because of all the kids that had autism in our three families. So we hired a private gymnastics teacher that knew how to teach kids on the autism spectrum. And so it was kind of like sensory integration and gymnastics and gym time. And and it was very inexpensive when the three families were able to share that cost. Doing a private instruction that would get costly, and you just couldn't do it on a long-term basis. There's so many different things like that. And I think a lot of therapists, you know, especially now with COVID and all these other things happening, they would be much more likely to take on, if somebody were to approach them and say, would you work with this group of families? You know, here's our kids' needs. You know, what do you think? And it doesn't hurt to ask. That's a great point. As you were talking about that too, Homeschool Plus, they didn't have that Bridges program at first. Mm-mm. Right? And so,
no.
So if you have a group that's mission would possibly encompass that, I mean, it wouldn't hurt also to approach them and say, well, I know of this group that does this. What do you think? If we were to, a couple families come in and help you develop this.
Yes.
So there's just so many different ways to look at this. And there's just not one right or wrong answer, I guess, is kind of what we're coming to.
Right. And even regular co-ops that don't have the resources or the ability to bring in experts, as a leader, one thing I think you can do is really talk with parents and get to know them. I really strongly feel that, when somebody approaches us with a child with a profound special need and we're trying to figure out how to fit them in, it may seem overwhelming, but if we really communicate well with the family, we may be able to find a way to fit them in without having to hire someone with special training or create a special program. There are ways we can incorporate students with special needs into a regular homeschool program with just homeschool moms teaching these classes with just some knowledge and some understanding.
Yes. Yeah. Knowledge and understanding. Love that. Yes. And that's exactly what it is. It's for a lot of people, being around somebody with a disability that you don't understand, it's uncomfortable. But once you understand and you realize that, oh, this is why this child does this. It isn't because, you know, they're mean-spirited or they're trying to misbehave. And plus, I think it benefits everybody. You know, the teachers and the other kids in the classroom as well, just to know that we all don't do things the same, and that's okay. That's awesome.
You know, one of my best stories, you know, because my kids, like I said, my kids went to Homeschool Plus, and it just warmed my heart so much. My son, who's, you know, my daughters both have ADHD and some other issues, but my son, it's always been just no problem, completely normal, very calm, you know, just, but having always been homeschooled, you never know, because he has been exposed to a lot of things. And
right.
We were at Homeschool Plus, and one of the students who was part of the Brain Bridges program, so obviously profound special needs, profound autism. And, I guess just following my son around everywhere. And I thought, oh boy, here we go. My 16-year-old son is probably gonna be like, oh my Lord. Oh my, I could not believe how gentle and understanding and compassionate my son was with him. And I thought, you know, I just get this picture of kids who are mainstream, you know, public school kids, and how they would react. And, I think that's one wonderful thing about the homeschool community is the kids don't have those preconceived notions, or, you know, and we can maybe bring in these people and really incorporate them into our groups and our co-ops, and it can work. It can really work.
Yes.
Because they aren't coming in with this idea of, you know, cliques and separations and things. I have to tell you, I was just so impressed with that. And, all the kids just like they brought this kid in, and they were just they loved on him, and they made him one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Definitely. And you know, we take away the age barriers, you know, and all these other things
as
homeschoolers, and our kids just know how to relate to one another so much better, and to adults. But they're just much more understanding and compassionate, and that's the wonderful thing about being in a homeschool community, is that we can accept each other's differences. And it's just finding that fit and investing in it. You know, that's kind of, as we're kind of wrapping up our time together, I think those are some huge takeaways, Sherry, that you shared with us, is that we have to invest first in the you know, figuring out what we need. And then invest in, you know, is, you know, the group that we found worth the investment, or is it something that we need to craft on our own? And then also the investment of setting up that structure properly and making sure that this is something that's going to withstand, you know, some of the things that are going to come that group's way, testing that purpose and how that's carried out, and as it grows and starting out small. I just, you have so much wisdom to share with us tonight. So, any closing comments before we wrap up?
Oh, I just want to remind everybody, if you live in Virginia, please feel free to contact me. I have a Facebook group and a newsletter and other things, and lots of resources I can provide you for what groups already exist in Virginia. And if you want to start a group in Virginia, I'm glad to help, and I can put you in contact with other leaders as well. Great. So it's leadersupport@heav.org.
Great. And I will share that on the YouTube description, as well as we get that updated tomorrow, so that all of that information will be there, as well as I wrote down a lot of the resources that Sherry shared. So I'll make sure those are all linked in there as well, so that you can just click on that on the YouTube channel and catch it all from there. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sherry. This has been a wonderful conversation. Definitely the best way to end our month-long discussion on finding community, because there's lots of different places we can search it out, find it, and, you know, change, but sometimes we just have to do it on our own and get it going. So thank you for just the kind of that encouragement and that boost that it's possible, and that it's not as hard as, or maybe as daunting as we might think it is. So thanks so much for that. And thank you for all that you're doing to support the homeschoolers in Virginia, because it's a lot. So
thank you.
We just love HEAV. So this is the end of our month, November, and I just want to wish you all, first of all, a happy Thanksgiving. And if you're listening to the podcast, I guess it's after Thanksgiving because it's coming on Sunday. But next month in December, we're just going to have a couple of broadcasts, but those two broadcasts are going to focus on your family and building relationships within your family. And what a perfect time right before, you know, the Christmas holiday season. How do we connect? And so our guest next week, she and her husband run a nonprofit that takes parents, or if the parents have a disability or the children have a disability or special need, they take them out on an adventure and camping, like in the wild. And they love that. So she's going to talk to us about growing family relationships through shared adventures. And whether you're adventurous or not, join us next week. And we'll be talking about that and building your family relationships. So, and also thank you, Bright Star Math, for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. We appreciate your support. And thank you all for watching and supporting our nonprofit, Sped Homeschool. You can find out more to donate at spedhomeschool.com and all the resources we have there to empower you to homeschool your child with special educational needs. So thanks again, Sherry. This was awesome, and thank you for just taking time out of your schedule, especially on Thanksgiving week. And thank you all for watching, and we'll see you right here next week on Sped Homeschool Conversations. Bye, everybody.
Do you ever hear sayings make their way through the culture and the church that seem nice in theory, but are actually theologically problematic? My name is Shara Donahue, and I'm the host of The Bible Never Said That, a podcast where we examine these popular sayings under the lens of biblical truth. We cover sayings like, God won't give you more than you can handle, time heals all wounds, and follow your heart. We also spend time exploring how people use Bible verses out of context. If you want to grow in discernment and truth, join us and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.